Willow Creek Springs presents Healthy Living with your host, Joe Grumbine.
I'd like to welcome you all to the Healthy Living Podcast, and I am your host, Joe Grumbine, and I have with me a very special guest today, and her name is Dr. Denise Canton, and I've known Denise now for, it's been, I don't know, probably, what, 8 or 9 years? Eight years? Been a while.
Yeah, since about 2014, really. So, yeah.
Okay. So there we go. Yeah. And I met Denise through advocacy work that I've been doing on my own behalf and on behalf of many others. And that has to do with the cannabis world. Well, this is a Healthy Living Podcast. And for all of the new listeners, this is really what it says. It's a gigantic, broad spectrum topic that I think is important enough because it affects every single one of us. There isn't a human being on this planet that doesn't have a desire to be healthy. And that affects every cell of our being. It affects every molecule. Mind, body, spirit, diet, exercise, medicine, technique, practices, all of it. And so this is sort of my cast of characters I'm introducing. Dr. Canton is an osteopath, which is something not everybody even knows what that's all about. So Denise, why don't you at least introduce yourself and tell us, you know, what brings you here?
Very happy to be here. My name is Dr. Denise Canton. I'm an osteopathic physician who was trained in osteopathy and family practice at the Texas College of Osteopathic Medicine in Fort Worth. I've been involved in the medical field now for over 40 years, and I had a practice originally doing family practice and a lot of musculoskeletal work because as osteopaths were trained in manipulation as well as drugs and surgery. And from there, I developed a rather severe illness and ended up having to stop working for 20 years. Wow. And then recovering from that by using a lot of the techniques that we can talk about going forward, I was able to get back to work and now became involved in the cannabis field. So I've been doing cannabis medicine, doing a lot of work with cancer patients and chronic pain, musculoskeletal injuries, and helping people with their overall health and, you know, looking at things like diet and what they're doing to support themselves mentally, things like that. So that's where I am now.
It almost sounds like you're a little bit more involved in a patient's experience than just finding the box they fit in and prescribing the known treatment.
Yes. Well, I think part of that is because a lot of the patients that I deal with and have seen in the past deal with a lot of chronic pain, chronic illness, as compared to an acute situation, you know, like one came in with a bloody nose, it'd be a whole different story. Right. But by the time I see people, they've been dealing with things for years, and medicine and drugs are not good when it comes to trying to resolve a long-term illness. I mean, you keep treating the symptoms of it, but you never get to the root cause. And I like to go deeper with patients. You know, sometimes we talk about the spiritual. Sometimes, you know, we'll talk about the biological. You know, we're not all created biochemically equal. We're all very different. There's no average person. So, you know...
That is so huge, though, because doctors, again, I can say some stuff. Clearly, folks, I am not a doctor. I am not trained in medicine. I was raised by a doctor and a surgeon. And so I grew up in this world, and I most of my dad's friends were doctors. So I had doctors all around me all my life. And I've been to plenty of them with plenty of medical problems. But the thing that you just we're saying is, you know, medicine and drugs as a long-term solution. You know, there's an old wisdom. If you always do what you always did, you always get what you always got. And that's kind of what drugs do. You know, they do the thing they did, and then over time they do it less good because you get used to them. But what they generally don't do is fix anything. They generally don't heal you. And, you know, like you're talking about, spending time with people. And you know, the kind of the cool thing is we have this dynamic because you're a doctor, so you can say certain things I can't say. But you can't say certain things that I can. And so me as a not doctor who's been involved in, you know, the cannabis world for most of my life and witnessed things that, you know, I've watched doctors lose their licenses for even recommending things in a particular way or making available certain things that, you know, blew me away. And I watched doctors, you know, more than one, actually, you know, be persecuted over that. And so we have to be mindful that although I bag on doctors a lot, as I bag on lawyers, it doesn't mean that there aren't good ones out there and there isn't a huge deep respect for the work that they do and the work that it's taken to be there. So I just wanted to frame that for a second there.
Yeah, I should put a little interjection that this is for entertainment purposes only. We're not diagnosing. And it's sad, but there are a lot of doctors who are prevented from saying things if they work in a hospital and their DEA is important to them. They have to be very careful if they're in a federally funded institution. They can't talk about cannabis. They can't even say cannabis.
And they're generally federally funded.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there are a lot of doctors who have a better appreciation now for cannabis, but it's still something that's there's a stereotype for patients that they face, and which is sad because it benefits people so much. But
on that note, it's so funny because a lot of the value of a show like this is that we're able to poke around at topics that, you know, are either marketed a certain way or people have preconceived ideas about. And, you know, in my world of cannabis and cannabis infused products that I've been involved with for 30 years before any of it was legal, you know, allegedly, you know, when California passed its medical law back in 1996, there were a handful of doctors that were willing to issue these recommendations that allowed for a defensible position, really, is all you got out of it. But then there became these groups of doctors, and they had, you know, these groups of doctors that would write recommendations. And I remember the amount of grief these doctors got as being chastised for just being, you know, pot doctors. And I remember thinking even then, before I had been attacked by the government and gone through all the things I had to go through, they're doctors. Like, you don't just get to be one of those. Like, you have to earn it. And it's not easier. Everybody would be one. And so, you know, the fact that they were willing to risk their licenses, their livelihoods, and even their freedom to do that. And I always thought of them as pioneers, you know, like some of us that were out there pushing the envelope and making things available to people that technically weren't, you know, today federally nothing's legal. And even the things I'm saying could be used against me if the right person decided to point it at me. And I'm aware of that, and I don't take that lightly. But meanwhile, you know, we have doctors that actually put their necks out and went after that. And I don't know, just things I want to give that the respect I think it's due, that in many cases it never was gotten. So I'll throw that out.
Well, I can just make a comment here to you. It's not like when you just said that doctors go after that. Sometimes, like in my situation, I didn't go after doing cannabis medicine. It got me. You know, I was had just come out of a lot of retraining that I did, and I was intending to go back to family practice and do family practice. And, you know, I was sitting there on one afternoon, and I, after finishing the program I had done, I wanted to get back to work and I wanted to get going, but I wasn't having much luck in finding things that I wanted to do out there, or, you know, an application for a place that I wanted to go. So I finally just called on my father and who's passed away. And I said, hey, look, I need some help here, you know, help me out and help me get a job now. And then I just let it go. And within a few hours on a Friday afternoon, I got a call, you know, to go practice in Sacramento. And I was like, oh, that's great. What will I be doing? And I was thinking family practice, you know. Oh, well, no, we need some help with cannabis. And, you know, we're looking for someone in cannabis medicine. And I'm shocked. But what did I have to lose? I believe in cannabis. I had used it in the past for pain. So I just went and stepped into it, and I've never looked back. Once I started doing cannabis medicine and hearing stories from my patients, you know, how it's changed their lives and how it's saved them with things that couldn't be done with drugs, I was just amazed and decided that I really didn't want to go back to pushing prescriptions, and ended up doing cannabis medicine for the last 8-10 years.
Wow. So you came from a place where you recognized its value, but never would have thought on your own initiative to go out and pursue that sort of a path. But it came a knock in after you went and reached out beyond, huh?
Yep. I think for me, one of the things as I've grown as a physician, and when I think I have a holistic approach, which is really just an attitudinal approach to medicine, you know, and it incorporates things like the individuality of your patient and your doctor-patient relationship, as well as all the other things like the biological, the psychological, the, you know, spiritual, all those things coming together. And when you start looking at that and trying to help people with disease from wherever, whatever perspective you need help with at the time, it's just an amazing toolbox to really help people to get to the bottom of what they're dealing with and to get better and more functional in life.
So that seems to me to be such a powerful approach. And you talk about the individual need, you know, to assess and diagnose and treat every single person, which to me is, I'm always telling people, as I can't give medical advice, I can give practical advice. And I can say, look, my experience is that go pay attention to yourself and figure out, you know, where you're at. And then you can maybe determine if something you did something. Like, you know, we have so many chemicals going on inside of us, even if we don't take pharmaceuticals, that it's hard to know sometimes if something is helping or not, because you got so much going on. And when you have this sort of cookie cutter pharma approach to Western medicine or allopathic medicine, and then if you know anybody who's over 50 and you ask them about their meds, generally every single person has a toolkit of prescriptions that they're on, and each one of them is a powerful drug in and of itself. And then you mix two of them together and they do something different. You got this whole chemistry set going on. And I don't know how anybody figures anything out. So you're talking about a practical approach and getting to talk to these folks. And I guess I should ask you talk to them about their diet and their sleep and their stress levels and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
How important is all that as opposed to just the symptom? You know, I have a throbbing pain in my knee that won't go away.
Yeah. Well, it's true. You know, you start with where they're coming from and what they need. And at that moment, someone needs pain relief. So you're going to offer them something, whether it's be a cannabis topical to put on it, and something to take, whether it be a gummy or something like that, and to make sure that they're getting better sleep, which they generally do when they use cannabis and things like that. And the approach of, well, do they need something else because they're having arthritis throughout their whole body? And it's a major autoimmune and inflammatory response. So I like to talk to people about an anti-inflammatory diet and what they're eating. And there's food is a lot of the food manufacturing industry has not made food that's friendly for us.
Right.
In the sense, there's so much sugar. I mean, sugar is terrible for the body. So, you know, trying to get someone to stop sugar, because sugar is very inflammatory. And processed foods and learning how to eat a clean diet where you know where your food is coming from. You cooked it. You don't have all this preservatives in it and pesticides. I mean, some of the cancers that we deal with, like the leukemias and other kinds of cancers, are affected by the pesticides that are put on our foods or things like that. So the diet's important, and then how they look at their food.
You're bringing up a huge point, and I this initial conversation, we're going to touch on a lot of things, and I'm hoping that I don't put you off and you want to come back and do this a bunch of times. But this is something I'm always talking about as an advocate in the cannabis world, in the licensed and regulated cannabis world. They always focus on the testing of pesticides and mycotoxins and heavy metals and how important it is, right? And I bring up the point, I'm not saying it's not. All I'm saying is nobody's ever died from cannabis that we can directly attribute consumption of cannabis, regardless of anything being put on it. There's never been a single death attributed directly to the consumption of cannabis. And yet, what do we do every single day? There's no regulation of certain pesticides. We bring in vegetables and fruits from all over the world, and including packaged, processed, canned, literally from everywhere in the world. And you can get something that's certified organic from Malaysia. And what the hell does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. And we're eating and consuming and drinking. Alcohol doesn't have regulations of pesticides that are grown on the vines or the grapes. There's just, and it goes on and on and on. So the thing that we do the most, which is eat and drink, as opposed to consuming anything else, right? That's where we're getting the most effect in our own chemistry, and that's positive and or negative. And just taking just that one piece alone, just saying, you know, never mind sugar. That's a week's worth of conversation there. But just the toxins of where did you eat it? Like, I learned in my mind that if I grow it in my own little backyard hugel culture, permaculture growth, and I know from the second I put that seed in the ground to the second I harvested it, what went on it, or most importantly, what didn't go on it, I can be confident of what I'm eating. Other than that, we don't know. And I think that that's a huge element of everybody's health. And I think you just, as a physician, talking to these people about that could probably have as much of an impact as so many other things put together.
Mm-hmm. And that's just one little piece. And then you look at the psychological effects of what's going on for a person with their health, you know, their mental health, their belief systems. There's a lot to it. If you're trying to help someone really resolve their issues, you kind of follow where the patient needs to go in terms of, you know, if you listen enough to a patient, they'll tell you what's wrong with them. And
you have to spend time with them.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing that allopathic doctors generally don't do much of. I you know, in my world as a formulator and as an outlaw cannabis guy, I've worked with a lot of people that came to natural medicine as a last resort, and so the stories that I'll be sharing with this public in the years coming, a lot have to do with, you know, I here's where I started. I went through this whole Western drama and I ended up here where they couldn't help me anymore. So as a last resort, I said, well, maybe this can help. And here years later, I'm down this road and I can't help but think, what if that doctor had just spent some time with them rather than just shuffling them off down the preordained path?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's difficult in medicine nowadays because, unfortunately, you know, when I first started, it wasn't the best, but you could have time with people and you didn't have insurance companies hanging over you because you worked for the HMO and they're watching your 10-minute appointment and you're not producing. Or, you know, what's happening now is very difficult. I don't work in that system anymore. So I'm lucky because if I want to sit there and talk to a patient, I'm just going to do it, you know. And if someone wants my help and reaches out, then I work with them.
So that likely limits the amount of
have that you it, like right. You have to. They just don't give you time and space, and you know.
So it seems to me that people would come to you with a pretty broad range of issues. Like it seems that allopathic doctors tend to specialize, and, you know, it used to be you had a general practitioner or a pediatrician or, you know, the sort of general doctor that would kind of do a lot of things. And nowadays everybody's an ist of some sort. And it seems that you've still got a fairly broad reaching practice.
I can say that since I've been in the cannabis industry, I've seen things that I never studied in medical school. They're so complicated. And you're right. Usually the people I see are at the end. They've tried everything. You know, they don't want it. They're tired of the drugs. The drugs aren't working. Or, you know, even if someone's got cancer and they want to treat it in a natural way, the things I see are much more complicated than when I first started out in medicine. And most doctors don't deal with all the different things that I see doing cannabis medicine.
And I'm wondering, you know, you talked about diet, you talked about psychological effect. I'm sure sleep is a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you even mentioned, you know, that you're not opposed to drugs and traditional treatments as they're needed. So, it almost seems that, you know, you've got every tool in your box rather than just a handful of them.
Well, let's just take one little thing, and that's pain, chronic pain. You know, we can all just hand someone opiates and they get addicted to those opiates, and then we have to shut them off and now they're a drug addict. Or, you know, yeah, you can go the route of giving someone a pill for that. You can also go the route of, all right, what joint are we dealing with, getting the physical therapy, using topicals so that it relaxes the muscles. And, you know, by using cannabis, they can relax their muscles. They can feel less pain. They can move better. They can exercise. And it's just a different approach.
And the notion with cannabis, you know, one of the biggest problems with it in life is that, you know, the government has really limited and restricted the research that's been able to be done until fairly recently in other countries mostly. And so now that they're finally starting to, you know, get some studies that are coming out, this is something that I like to talk about, because I think it's important that when somebody cites a study, you know, what does that really mean? You know, different groups study different things for different reasons. A lot of groups will study something to prove something or disprove it. And a lot of times they'll only look at the evidence that does that. And you know, cannabis is such a complicated plant. And, you know, there are plants that contain, you know, I've been working with different herbal treatments for, you know, long as I've been working with cannabis, over 30 years. And I'm no expert at all. I'm just a guy who's done a lot of different things. But some herbal plants, and by that I just mean a useful plant, contain one primary constituent that we know as being helpful. Some contain 5 or 6 or 10. Cannabis has got over 100, more than 200. that we know of.
Didn't I read somewhere that there were like 400 cannabidiols?
In something the- like that. Yeah, we don't even know. And so that's the part that blows me away. Like we know that more than 10,000 years, the human species has recognized this particular plant as being beneficial. They found, you know, traces of it in Chinese mummies and mm-hmm. Ice Age travelers, you know, had those seeds with them and not other seeds. Why is that? Well, for whatever reason, they determined it was valuable and, you know, food, fuel, fiber, medicine, whatever you want to say. At the end of the day, we don't have any way to know what they were thinking other than that they had a little pouch that had this particular plant in it. We can observe things by trying them and doing them and noticing what we notice. And then we can test for certain things. But my contention has always been that in order to really do the research needed to really verify, you know, cannabis medicine, it's going to take years and years and years because of the specialized, detailed experiments that have to be conducted and replicated. So what are your thoughts on these studies that keep coming out?
Well, you know, I don't see us doing a lot of work, really. I don't see that we're allowed to yet. And a lot of the stuff that is going on, it's being done with CBD products, I think. There are some with THC, but, you know, one of the limitations is that to do research on cannabis, you have to use the government's supply system.
Is that still coming from the University of Mississippi?
I don't know.
Where they grew the best stuff, right?
Yeah. But there are studies that have come out by the NIH that THC actually kills cancer cells. But, you know, I can't say that on.
Right. Not as an actual medical directive, but you can mention that there's a study that says that. Yep. And we can find that study on our own and look it up. And mostly that's what I'm encouraging people to do and listening to this show is, you know, go find out for yourself. We're talking to experts with particular experiences. And like what you have said, you've seen things you never saw anywhere else. Well, that's got to be just the tip of the tip of the tip of some iceberg out there, right? I mean, you're one person with one set of experiences that's widely bigger than many people's, and yet, you know, you're coming into uncharted territory.
Well, the thing about cannabis that's really impressive is if you think about what causes disease, their two biggest things that we're taught is stress and inflammation. Well, if you just look at those two things and you look at CBD and THC and what those things do, they help to reduce stress. They're anti-inflammatory. So when a patient is using CBD products or one-to-one where it's half and half, so they get better pain relief, or something at night to help them sleep, because you can't heal if you can't sleep.
Right.
It's hitting all those things.
It's so, kind of a no-brainer, really, right? I mean, no,
and there's no harmful side effect to it.
That was the part I really wanted to get to, because the thing that, you know, even in herbal medicine, there's a lot of herbs that are toxic at certain levels, and people are foolish in many cases where they think something's good, so let's take a gallon of it, you know, and take it until it hurts you. But of all the herbs, you know, and I specifically don't work with certain herbs just because they have toxic levels that I can't assume that anybody who takes something that I make is going to be smart. So I try to have a foolproof element to it. It says if you drink the whole bottle, you'll still be okay. But that's the beauty of working with the, you know, CBD and THC. THC has a built-in safety system that says if you take a certain amount, you're going to wish you hadn't, but it's not going to hurt you. It'll just make you feel like you're hurt. And CBD doesn't even have that. Like, I mean, I guess theoretically, you know, it has an adverse effect. If you get too much of it, it can make you dizzy or nauseous or little whatever, but it's, they don't have that, like, every single pharmaceutical, and I have yet to see one that doesn't, has in its prescription at the bottom of it, warning, may cause, and then there's something. And a lot of times it's a lot, and including death. There are side effects of death that the FDA, in its all infinite wisdom, says, well, that's okay. That's an acceptable risk. And cannabis has none of that. In fact, it to this day, they keep trying to prove a death directly related, but there's always some many contributing factors, and we can't even research it. And that's, we've talked about a lot of things that we can go on for weeks and months on, but I just want to kind of state the obvious in that.
Let me throw in one more, because we said inflammation and stress, right? Those things are the big ones. Well, let's look at one that's still considered part of holistic medicine, spiritual, and how cannabis relates to spiritual. Sure. And one of the things I've learned over the years that really impresses me is that cannabis can help someone be in the present moment. They can have a diagnosis where they're going to be dead in 2 weeks. They've got cancer. They know they're dying. And yet they can use cannabis and all of a sudden be with their grandkids or their kids and be totally present and let that go. You know,
isn't
I have
wild.
Yeah, I have patients that talk to me about how when they go into counseling or while they're doing counseling, sometimes if they use cannabis, it opens their mind and allows them to shift to another perspective, get out of the negative thinking. Well, there's not very many drugs that do that.
No. You know?
And cannabis does, and it allows people to work out for themselves what's happening.
You know, years and years ago, this is probably going back into probably the early 90s, before we had a law that allowed us anything in California. I was making this tincture that was I made it as a recreational tool. And it was a liqueur of sorts that was heavily infused with cannabis extract. And I still got my old recipe book. One day I have never seen anybody do anything that like that yet. But anyways, I was an experimenter and played around, but I came to discover, you know, a couple of people that were in hospice and cancer patients, elderly, for whatever reason, they were done. Like the hospital says, well, there's nothing more we can do. We're going to send you home. And hospice is basically just pain management for the most part. It's really nothing more to it. They're not trying to keep you alive. And generally what they do is give you a bunch of morphine. And this guy in particular was a dear friend of mine, and he hated the morphine. It made him itch. And he didn't like the way he wanted to talk to you, you know, and he was in a situation where he had lung cancer. So his lungs were compromised. He was on oxygen, so he couldn't smoke the cannabis. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really like edibles. But I had this, you know, this liqueur. And so I gave him a little bit of that. And you know, we had some of the deepest conversations. He says, you've been one of the best friends I've ever had. And I thought to myself, I mean, we haven't known each other very long. I mean, we got close and we were friends. But it was that. It was that tincture that we were able to share together and connect in a way that morphine doesn't give you. Like you can't connect with somebody when you're, I've tried laudanum before as a recreational thing. Laudanum. It's an opium tincture. Victorian times, they used to have laudanum as a treatment, and it's an opium tincture. Anyways, I tried it a couple of times and it was so lovely. I says, I better not do this anymore. But what it doesn't give you is mindfulness. It doesn't give you presence. It lets you go off into a very soft, lovely place where you don't feel anything.
You're not present.
Yeah, it's the opposite of being present. Yeah, you're not present. But that was the one thing that you said. And it's funny because people equate cannabis with just being spaced out, right? You know, you get high and you're just and you're not there. But the reality is when you're using it medicinally and you're using it as a treatment sometimes we need to get away from things, and you can space out using cannabis. Trust me, I've done it plenty of times, but it can also do the opposite, which is really, I think, powerful. And maybe should be noticed more than anything, you know, in hospice care, especially. Like, you're dying, folks. Like, yeah. You're in hospice because they don't think you have more than a couple of weeks to live, period. That's all, right? Yeah. So who cares what you take? You have access to enough morphine to kill you. If you were to choose that road, you would have access to it. Why would it matter? And I remember back then when I was first getting involved in the collective world and trying to get into hospice, because once I discovered that, I'm like, oh my God, what a beautiful thing. Like, we have this tool we can offer these people. And we had a guy who was a quadriplegic, and he was the perfect mouthpiece for our group. And he was rolling up into these hospice extended care facilities, and none of them would talk to him because they were all federally funded. And we kind of found a loophole around a little bit of it individually and whatever, but nothing, we could never penetrate it because the people that needed it most, the government got in their way and says, nope, you can't even talk about it here.
I can tell you about a very particular patient who so happened that she went to church with my parents. So there was, you know, a desire to help and support just because of my family and everything else. And she had been diagnosed with a recurring cancer. She originally, like years ago, had breast cancer and got treatment, radiation and chemo and everything. And then years later developed lung cancer and other problems. And she came to me because they had told her there was nothing left that they could do or try. So I said, you know, there's nothing I can promise you. I don't have any idea because everybody's individually very different in how they respond to drugs and cannabis. But I helped her because she wanted me to help her with the protocol for RSO and what it means. And she did what she studied herself on what's given for the protocols, and she's now clear of cancer for over 2 years when she was supposed to be dead, and she's now totally clear of cancer and off visiting her family.
Yeah, you know? I love that story, and you know, that's a story that those of us, you know, that have put our necks out there. And we all put our necks out there in various ways. And for those of you who are just getting into this community, I've been an advocate for cannabis and the use of it for most of my life, really. But I went through a battle with the government, and now I'm an advocate for, you know, people that are going through cases and prisoners. And there's a prisoner that we're working with right now through our advocacy group, The Human Solution, that Dr. Denise has been a generous supporter of for many years. And he's in prison right now for operating a legal dispensary and a manufacturing facility. But the federal government didn't agree with what the state government said. And he's in federal prison. And he's not alone. There's many people that suffer that. But while he's in prison, I have another podcast that I do that is centered around this advocacy work. And I have a lot of prisoners that come on as guests that are calling from prison or from being freshly released. And he's called our show numerous times. And he's planning an outpatient program that will be using cannabis infused products and various compounds to help people to get off of opiates and addictive substances. And he's planning this from prison. and he's coordinating. He's got some physicians involved. He's got, he's last time I talked to him was probably a month ago. And, you know, it's limited what you can do because you're in prison. But he's coordinating this whole thing, and I think he's scheduled to be released in a year or so, not a huge amount of time. But it's interesting, though, that you know, some of the people that have been willing to stick their neck out for this one particular plant, this one particular substance. You know, I've been a nurseryman for 15, 20 years, growing and selling all different kinds of plants. And I've grown vegetables and herbs and flowers and trees and every kind of plant. And I've also grown this one plant, the cannabis plant. I would never risk my freedom or my family or my property or any other plant, because no. I have never seen any other plant that brings to humanity what this one does. And this show is not a cannabis show. It's a healthy living show. But we're going to probably find this plant popping itself up in all different aspects of it. And I think it's noteworthy. I think very grateful that you come here. And for all of you listeners, Denise is very shy, and you almost wouldn't know it by how well she did here. But she's coming out and loosening up a little bit. And I'm really grateful that I don't think this has been too painful. So I think we'll probably be able to get you to come back.
Fair enough.
Awesome. Right. Thank you so much. Do you have a final parting shot or anything you want to let people know about as we're walking away here?
To take control and take power back for your own health, and don't give your power away to others. Be open to many things. If you're looking for help, there are a lot of tools in a tool bag when you're using a holistic approach.
I love it. I love it. And you know, it's funny that word holistic really came into my mind as we're making labels for things. And my wife is always trying to pick out that right word. And she's talking about homeopathy. I'm like, no, that's not what we do. It's a different thing. And then we were looking at holistic and the concept of being all inclusive. And like you said, not limiting yourself. I really like that idea. And I think that exemplifies what this community is all about. Dr. Denise Canton, it's an absolute pleasure to have you join us. I'm looking forward to having you back again.
Thank you very much. It's nice to join you all.
Awesome. Bye-bye. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.